The 30th verse says, Then shall appear the sign of the Son of Man in heaven, and then shall all the tribes of the earth mourn, and they shall see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of heaven with power and great glory, and he shall send his angels, and so on. These Jews that have been scattered by the Antichrist and the woman that fled into the wilderness, they will be the elect that will be gathered at this time. There is another elect, the church, that will have been gathered already. We'll move on now, principally to the book of Zechariah. And now when Israel came back from the land of Egypt, not Egypt, but Babylon, in the days of Jeremiah, there was one godly king left after he came on the scene. His name was Josiah. Josiah was killed by unwisely interfering with Pharaoh Necho. Jeremiah mourned for Joseph because of Josiah's death. And then came rapidly Jehoiakim, and Zedekiah. And there had been several invasions of Judah by the Babylonians. And finally, in about 587 AD, Judah. Now, Israel had been carried captive over 100 years before. But at that time, Judah was carried to the land of Babylon. And Jeremiah told them they would be there for 70 years. And after that 70 years, there was a man by the name of Cyrus conquered Babylon. And in Ezra 1, he gave the Jews permission to return to their land. The leaders of that company were Zerubbabel and Jeshua. Now, in these post-captivity books, Ezra, Nehemiah, and Esther, Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi are post-captivity books. That is, they were written after the captivity. And in these, you will find this priest, sometimes called Joshua, sometimes called Jeshua. The first syllable will be spelled with either an O or an E. And Zerubbabel was the leader. We'll have to call him a prince since he couldn't be a king of the house of David. And Jeshua was the priest of the day. And they led the company back. And after a while, a great time of discouragement came over them. The people around them opposed them. They had laid the foundation of the house of the Lord, and some near 50,000 of them had gone back from Babylon. But after between 16 and 20 years, they still hadn't done much because the enemy discouraged them. And in Ezra, we read of these struggles, how the enemy went to the king of Babylon and got the work stopped. And at this point now, God raised up, maybe they had been preaching before, but at this time God raised up two prophets named Haggai and Zechariah. And they began to preach to the people. And notice when this began. Haggai 1 says, In the second year of Darius the king, in the sixth month, in the first day of the month, came the word of the Lord by Haggai the prophet unto Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, governor of Judah, and to Joshua, the son of Jehozadak, the high priest, saying, Thus speaketh the Lord of hosts, saying, The people say the time is not come, the time that the Lord's house should be built. If you read this book, you remember that Brother Copley's sermon on the building of the tabernacle was based on this text. Well, anyway, the Lord was going to stir up the people to cause them to build a house. Now, on this man, Darius, Cyrus had died some years before in 29 B.C. You'll notice at the heading of your Bible, this is Bishop Usher's date, this is 520. They had gone back in the year 536. So this puts us 16 years after the company had gone back. Cyrus had died, and this man took the throne. There was a Cambyses, I believe he was called, and then there was a usurper took the throne, and then this Darius successfully overthrew him and took the throne, and this comes some 16 years after the company had come back. Your chronologists may differ a little bit. Some may say 518, some may say 520, and I'll tell you this, it indicates this. It's kind of hard to pinpoint a date 2,500 years ago. Did you ever try it? In fact, try to pinpoint one 100 years ago. And unless you have a historian's book, you may, even in there, you may find the historians disagreeing. But the facts of the case remain the same, so Haggai began to preach. Now, notice an interesting thing. This prophecy began in the second year of Darius the king in the sixth month. Now notice in the first verse is Zechariah, in the eighth month, in the second year of Darius, So his prophecy began 2 months after Haggai's did. So they were right together, weren't they? They worked together. There are many cases where there were prophets on the scene at the same time, like Ezekiel and Daniel. And Ezekiel mentions Daniel a couple of times, but Daniel never mentions Ezekiel. And this was the case in different ones of the prophets. Well, they contend that it wasn't time to build the house of the Lord. And so he reproves them, consider your ways. And he tells them why there was famine in the land. You've sown much and you bring in little. You eat, but you have not enough. You drink, but you have not. You're not filled with drink. And then he tells why. Go on, he tells them, go up to the mountain and bring wood. Build a house and I'll take pleasure in it. Ye looked for much and lo, it came to little. And when ye brought it home, I did blow upon it. And why? Because of mine house that is waste. And ye run every man unto his own house. You'll notice the date of this prophecy is given. And in the 15th verse of the same chapter, in the 24th day of the 6th month, there is another prophecy given in the 2nd chapter and the 1st verse. This is in the 7th month. There is another prophecy given. And in the 10th verse, in the 24th day, there was another one. 24th day of the 24th day, rather, of the 9th month. All of this came quickly to Haggai. Now, there are times when things need to be done quickly. Now, like you take Isaiah. He prophesied in the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah over a long period of time. Daniel prophesied during the time of, as recorded in his book, Nebuchadnezzar, and Belshazzar, and Darius, and Cyrus. There was evil Merodach came in there also, but he isn't mentioned in Daniel. In Jeremiah he is. But Haggai's prophecy came to him quickly, and he is endeavoring to stir up the people. Now notice in the 10th verse, the heaven over you is stayed from dew, and the earth is stayed from her fruit. Now the Lord had sent them back there to build a house. The nations round about had stopped them. And you'll find this interesting. Now I don't know whether you ever built a church or anything or not, but when you start, the community will turn out. They already work for about 2 days, and then it'll narrow down to a group of men that are in it. Finally, there'll be a half a dozen, and this may narrow down to 2 or 3. But eventually, the church will get built. And that may be the way it was here. We do not know. But the 11th verse, the Lord said, I call for a drought. You have here your negligent on the corn, the new wine, the oil, and he was endeavoring to get them to start it back again. So this stirred up Zerubbabel, the 12th verse, and then Joshua, the Jozadak the high priest, the son of Jozadak the high priest, with all the remnant of the people, they obeyed the voice of the Lord their God and the words of Haggai the prophet. And notice the 13th verse calls Haggai the Lord's messenger. I am with you, saith the Lord. And the Lord stirred up the spirit of Zerubbabel and the governor of Judah and the spirit of Joshua, the son of Jozadak, and the spirit of all the remnant of the people. And they came and did work in the house of the Lord of hosts their God. And on the 24th day, Haggai, in the 24th day of the 6th month in the 2nd year of Darius the king. Then in the 7th month, there's another prophecy. Speak to Zerubbabel, he said. And he said in the 3rd verse, who is there left among you that saw this house in her first glory? Now the house had been gone for nearly 100 years now. So the men that could remember it must have been very aged men. How do you see it now? Is it not in your eyes in comparison of it as nothing? The book of Zechariah says, who hath despised a day of small things? In this temple, there was no Ark of the Covenant. There was very little gold. Just like you take the millennial temple in the book of Ezekiel, there's no gold. There are so many things that are absent there. They're not typifying something wonderful. But he says, be strong. How often the Lord spoke to Joshua in the book of Joshua. Be strong. And all the people of the land, I am with you, saith the Lord of hosts. What a precious promise. Jesus said, lo. I became a little curious about that word, lo. I was going to count them. That word appears in the Bible dozens of times. Lo, I am with you always. It means, in the New Testament, it means to look, to see. See, I am with you. And in Romans 8, I believe it's the 32nd verse. Who, if God be for us, who can be against us? And here the Lord, in order to console them, says, I am with you. There's that presence gives us stabilizing quality. In the 46th Psalm, there's a remarkable statement, and it says this, God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in time of trouble. Therefore will not we fear, though the earth be removed, and though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea, though the waters thereof roar and be troubled, though the mountains shake with the swelling thereof. Now, I'll tell you, if that all took place, I'd have a hard time not to be scared. But they said, we won't be scared, because they said, the Lord is our refuge. And now he said that he was with them. According to the word that I covenanted with you when ye came out of Egypt, so my spirit remaineth among you, fear ye not. And now here's a statement that Paul quotes in the 12th chapter of the book of Hebrews. Yet once a little while, and I will shake the heavens and the earth and the sea and the dry land. And Paul said it signifieth the removal of those things that can be shaken, that which cannot be shaken may remain. In the first of Hebrews we read, but thou, O Lord, and they shall be changed, but thou art the same, and thy years shall not fail. And that's one that will remain. In Hebrews 13:8, Jesus Christ the same yesterday and today and forever. He remains. I will make all nations, rather, I will shake all nations. What a thing when God appears. Remember the scene in Exodus, the 19th chapter, when Paul, quoting in Hebrews 8, said, Moses said, I exceeding fear and quake. There's a text there I wanted to read, if I can turn to it. And Mount Sinai was altogether on a smoke, because the Lord descended upon it in fire, and the smoke thereof ascended as the smoke of a furnace, and the whole mount quaked greatly. Can you just imagine a mountain just vibrating like that? I came from Denver recently on a plane, and I had to hang on to both seats just to walk down the aisle. It was vibrating so badly. The pilot said, this prevails at all levels. In other words, we couldn't get out of it. Well, God is going to shake all nations, and the desire of all nations shall come. Do you know who that is? That's the Lord Jesus Christ. And I will fill this house with glory, saith the Lord of hosts. The silver is mine, and the gold is mine, saith the Lord of hosts. The glory of this latter house shall be greater than the former, saith the Lord of hosts, and in this place will I give peace. Now he was still talking about, and to those, don't you think this place looks cheap in comparison? The former one, the walls were lined with gold and studded with jewels, according to the report in Chronicles. And this one had none of those things, but he said, now the glory of this house is going to be greater than the former. And I wonder if that didn't happen. That is, it began to happen in Luke 2, when Jesus Christ was found in the temple talking to the doctors and the lawyers. He is the glory. And we feel that it was his presence there. Now, I know the second house was rebuilt by Herod the Great, all of this, but it was counted the same house. Now, on the 24th day in the 9th month, the second year of Darius, came the word of the Lord by Haggai the prophet. They were going to ask him about bearing holy flesh in his garments to touch the meat, and the priest answered, no. Then said Haggai, if one that is unclean by a dead body touch any of these, shall it be unclean? The priest answered and said, it shall be unclean. Then answered Haggai and said, so is this people, and so is this nation before me, saith the Lord. So it is, every work of their hands, that which they offer, is unclean. One of the sad things, and it has to be fought against, is the indifference that can creep in. There'll be a godly bunch of people in a church. Many times they will die off. Another generation takes over. It's kind of like the story of the old man. He had gone to church as a youth and enjoyed it, and he sang in the choir. The church became more worldly as the pastors came and went. Finally, they got a young man, and the old man's voice was no longer as melodious as it once was, and he asked him not to sing in the choir anymore. And that night he was weeping. The Lord came to him in a dream and asked him, what's the matter? He said, they won't let me sing in the choir. And the Lord said, what choir? No longer the Lord's choir. So Israel had this quickly now. They were stirred up to build the house of the Lord. The Lord said, I am with you. And now they've drifted. And when we get to Malachi, we won't have a lot to say there. But it says that people wouldn't even open the doors of the house of the Lord for naught. That is, they had to be paid for it. And they've pulled away the shoulders, shrugged probably, and was very pitiful. And I know from observation that indifference, callousness, discouragement, lack of interest All has to be judged out of the life of the overcomer. Now, there will be people always that will have those things. That's why there will be an innumerable company, as in Revelation 7. But also there will be those that judge those things. For example, Haggai. Now I pray you consider your way, or consider from this day, from before the stone was laid. Since those days, notice the conditions. When one came to an heap of 20 measures, that were but 10. When one came to the press fat to draw out 50 vessels, there were but 20. There was drought, famine. I smote you with blasting and mildew and with hail. Consider from this day upward and from the 24th day of this month, even from the day that the foundation of the Lord's temple was laid, consider it. Is the seed yet in the barn? Yea, as the vine, the fig tree, and the pomegranate, the olive tree hath not brought forth. From this day will I bless you. This is all to change now. And again the word of the Lord came unto Haggai on the 24th day of the month, saying, Speak to Zerubbabel, governor of Judah, saying, I will shake the heavens and the earth. Now, to show you that there is a turn to math to Hebrews 12, just a moment, that many times there is a double vision in the prophet's mind, or maybe something that he doesn't even understand, maybe something that he doesn't know what he's saying. The 26th verse, Hebrews 12, whose voice then shook the earth, but now he hath promised, saying, Yet once more I shake not the earth only, but also heaven. And this word yet once more signifieth the removing of those things that are shaken, as of things that are made, that those things which cannot be shaken may remain. Wherefore, we're receiving a kingdom which cannot be moved, let us have grace whereby we may serve God acceptably with reverence and godly fear, for our God is a consuming fire. It's going to be kind of like a ship that the flood's going to go over. Everything that isn't nailed down is going to be washed overboard. So everything that can be shaken is going to be shaken. I will overthrow the throne of kingdoms. I will destroy the strength of the kingdoms of the heathen. I will overthrow the chariots and those that ride in them, and the horses and their riders shall come down. And that day, saith the Lord of hosts, will I take thee, O Zerubbabel, my servant, the son of Shealtiel, saith the Lord, and will make thee a signet, for I have chosen thee, saith the Lord of hosts. So much for the little prophecy of Zechariah. He was on the scene at the same time as Zechariah. And these two and Malachi are the writing prophets in the post-exile period. Now, Ezra, Nehemiah, and Esther were also written, but they're not prophetic books. They record the coming back of Ezra with the company. Then later they record the coming back of Nehemiah with the company. And Daniel, how long he lived, we do not know. We know that he lived till about the beginning of the third year of Cyrus. Whether he died shortly afterwards, we do not know. There is no record. The word Daniel occurs twice in Nehemiah and Ezra, but both times it is shown that he was the one there mentioned who was a priest. The Daniel in the book of Daniel was of the royal line. So to the book of Zechariah. Zechariah was a young man. Now remember, well, his name has several meanings. Born in Babylon, one gives it. Melted in Babylon, I believe, is the way another one gives it. And in Matthew 23:35, he is called, the name is pronounced a little differently. He is incidentally in the lineage of Christ, or the 13th verse. And Zerubbabel begat Abiad, and Abiad begat Eliakim, and Eliam begat Azar, and so on. Notice here also, he is said to be a descendant of Salathiel, as we read about back here. And at this time now, he had been in the land of promise some 16 years, and yet in 2:4 of this book, run and speak to this young man. So he's still called a young man, so he must have been quite young when they came back from the land of Babylon. And then I might call attention to this, that sometimes God chooses to use a young man. Paul said to Timothy, Let no man despise thy youth. In the book of Timothy, and remember he had started traveling with Paul, they're back in the 16th chapter of the book of Acts. So he probably was in his 30s at that time. And what you give me, I will send on for the paying of the expenses of the book. If you want to give me anything personally for gasoline expenses, it goes in the little box over there, and Sister Agers gives it. But anything you give me personally for the book, well, I will send it on to pay the expenses. I told the Lord that I wouldn't keep a dime out of anything that came in on it. I don't expect to, except, of course, if I have to have mailing expenses, then I will use some of it. The book of Zechariah, this prophecy begins, as noted earlier, in the 8th month, in the 2nd year of Darius. The word of the Lord came unto Zechariah, the son of Berechiah, the son of Iddo, the prophet, saying, you'll notice some of these names. Zechariah means remembered Jehovah. If you have a Jackson's Proper Name Dictionary, you can find this. If not, you can find it in, I don't know where the Strong's Concordance should give it or not. Berechiah means blessed of Jehovah. And Iddo means timely, due time. It also means to adorn him. You know, we have words that mean a lot of different things. I think sometimes it's amusing about the word cleave. When you cleave something, you cut it in two. But you may cleave to somebody. So that word has a contradictory meaning. So you'll find some of these words may have a number of different meanings. And in the days of Joash, he was a king of Judah. His grandmother, Athaliah, that very delicate and tender-hearted grandmother, when she heard her king's son was killed, while she went murdered, she thought, all of her grandchildren. But Jehoiada, a godly priest, stole one of them and hid him in the house of the Lord. Then Athaliah was queen for 6 years, and then there was an insurrection, and she was killed, and Joash became king. But Jehoiada had saved his life. And after Jehoiada died, Jehoiada had a son named Zechariah. And after Jehoiada died, he had kept things in line pretty well. Why, Joash and the elders of Israel turned away from the Lord, and Zechariah, the son of Jehoiada, reproved them, and Joash actually let them stone him to death. What gratitude. Then notice this about this Zechariah. Notice Matthew 23, a very solemn thing indeed. The 35th verse of Matthew 23, that upon you may come all the righteous blood shed upon the earth, from the blood of righteous Abel unto the blood of Zechariah, the son of Berechiah, whom you slew between the temple and the altar. Pretty rugged thing to be a prophet of the Lord, isn't it? Now, the Jews believe that, the Jews have a legend or a tradition that Zechariah was killed. And notice in both instances, he's called Zacharias, the son of Berechiah. And so we believe it was the same man. And one of the sad things in the prophets is that they were continually called on to reprove Israel. Now, Jesus said one time, when the Son of Man cometh, shall he find faith on the earth? And people grow careless and indifferent. As I mentioned a while ago, Paul led a lot of people to God at Corinth, and then he had to write some letters of reproof. He led people to the Lord at Galatia, and then he had to write a letter of reproof. And in the 7 letters that John wrote under the dictation of the Lord Jesus Christ in Revelation, 5 of them have reproof in them. And that seems to be the history of the human race. One of the best things that there is, as far as we're concerned, is that God is a God of grace. And we need to keep it in mind for our own benefit and to be thankful. The Lord hath been sore displeased with your fathers, he said. Now the fathers, of course, were those that Jeremiah preached to and others. Therefore say thou unto them, thus saith the Lord of hosts, turn ye unto me, saith the Lord of hosts, and I will turn unto you, saith the Lord of hosts. Notice this repeated 4 times. In the 3rd verse, Lord of hosts, Lord of hosts. And in the 4th verse, again, the Lord of hosts. And turn ye now from your evil ways, and from your evil doings, but they did not hear nor hearken unto me, saith the Lord. That was the ones the prophets preached to. Your fathers, where are they? And the prophets, do they live forever? They pass off the scene. And just throwing this in, deviating, this is our time and our day. You hear the expression sometimes, run that by again. I didn't quite catch it. Meaning repeat what you said. Well, we're not going to get to run by again. This is it. This is our day, and tools laid by will rust. You remember this interesting prayer, I believe it's the 30th chapter of the book of Proverbs, when Agur prayed, give me not riches nor poverty. And John Bunyan said that prayer is laid by as long as rusty, because who prays, don't make me rich, keep me poor. I've heard a preacher say one time, I prayed hundreds of times, Lord, keep me poor, and when he said it, I said, I never did have to pray that way. But anyway, I know from experience, And I know from observation that we can be tripped. Remember, Paul said once, lest Satan get an advantage of us, for we're not ignorant of his devices. Then he said, we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers. And then again, in the same context, that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil, the trickery of the devil, the little things. Remember, take us the foxes, the little foxes that spoil the vine, for our vines have tender grapes. I begin to neglect prayer. It doesn't seem like much. The other day I got ashamed of myself. I turned the radio down, and maybe I mentioned it and offered thanks. And then I thought to myself, if I'd have been talking to some great man, I'd have turned it off. And instead of turning it off, I turned it down. And then since then, I've been turning it off when I prayed. Little things creep in, and they mar us. And it doesn't take much to, if somebody said, the whiter the garment, the easier it's spotted. I remember we had a woman in our meeting by the name of Hawk. Some of you know the Hawks that went to Bible school here. It was their grandmother. We had their grandfather and grandmother in a meeting I was pastoring, John Hawk and his wife. And she had a dream one time about, now this was her story. I'll tell it as she told it. She had a dream and she saw the wedding garments hanging on a line. And they were small. And she inquired of the Lord, why? He said, I cut people to fit the garments, not the garments to fit the people. I thought it was pretty good. So many times we can be conceited, a little bit of conceit, a little slumber, a little folding of the hand. So shall thy poverty come as an armed man. That is, it'll come in and overcome you. Well, I just threw that in. Notice he said, my words and my statutes, which I commanded my servants the prophets, did they not take hold of your fathers? And they returned and said, like as the Lord of hosts ought to do unto us, according to our ways and according to our doings, so hath he dealt with us. When the children of Israel landed in Babylon, I wonder how many of them just stopped and said, well, this is exactly what Jeremiah said was going to happen. And he had. And he tried to tell them. Isn't it a funny thing how hard it is to tell some people something? There was a carload of people passed me one time. I was about 13 or 14 years old, and I yelled at the top of my voice, bridge out! They just went on. After a while, they came back and stopped and halfway apologized for not paying any attention to me. Didn't hurt them. Upon the 24th day of the 11th month, which is the month Sebat, according to the marginal hour, February, in the second year of Darius, came the word of the Lord unto Zechariah, the son of Berechiah, the son of Iddo, the prophet, saying, now I was going to pause here and show you that this man was a priest. Notice Nehemiah 12:4, if you will. Before I get away from this, can you name, while I'm turning to that, any other prophets that were priests? Jeremiah was a priest. Anybody else? Ezekiel was a priest, and John the Baptist was a priest. Lots of great men came from Levi. The 12th chapter of the book of Nehemiah, enlisting the priests in the first part of the chapter, we read of Iddo, then of the descendants in the 16th verse of Iddo. Now this is his grandfather. His father must not have lived very long. Iddo, Zechariah, these were priests. And then going back to the book of, earlier in the book of Ezra, I believe it's the, well, that will suffice. There are several other texts in Ezra, and he was a priest, and yet God moved him to be a prophet. David was a king, but he was also a prophet. Moses is called a king once. He was king in Jeshurun, but he was a priest and a prophet. And of Christ it is said in this book that he shall be a priest upon the throne. So this vision came in this day, and it seems that all of these visions, some call it 8, some call it 10, depending on how you divide it, it's beside the point. They seem to have come to him in one night. I saw by night, and behold, a man riding upon a red horse. The word red means a rosy red. And he stood among the myrtle trees that were in the bottom, and behind him there were red horses, speckled and white. Speckled here means bay, red, yellow. Maybe they were speckled, these colors, but I noticed that the lexicon gave those three to the word speckled. They were among the myrtle trees. Remember Esther of old, her name, her Hebrew name was Hadassah. And then she's mentioned as Esther, Estar, the word Esther, an asterisk, an Astarte, and Easter, all come from the same word, having to do with a star. And he said, the prophet asked, what are these? Now we feel that the one man that's designated In the writings of the Old Testament, many times you'll find an individual singled out, and there may be others associated with him, like the man upon the waters. You will find by close examination that it is usually the pre-incarnate Christ. Now you take the angel that appeared to Hagar in the 16th of Genesis. Before it's over, she calls him Jehovah. And the angel that is different times called an angel in the 3rd chapter of Exodus, when Moses said, "Who shall I say sent me?" He said, "I am. Tell him I am sent you." Well, that's the name of Jehovah, the eternal God, the eternal self-existent God. So the man on the red horse seems to be another concept of the Lord. Before, he was Christ. He was the Lord, but he wasn't anointed with the Holy Spirit as a man yet, and he wasn't named Jesus yet. He was the Word. The angel that talked with me said unto me, "I will show thee what these be." The man that stood among the myrtle trees answered and said, "These are they whom the Lord has sent to walk to and fro through the earth." Can you tell me what runs to and fro throughout the whole earth? The eyes of the Lord. That's what a prophet told the king. I believe that's 2 Chronicles 16:9. Let's see. This is a good text to commit to memory. Take it with you. Kind of carry it, store it up in your mind. You know, there are some things that you remember. Mary hid all these things in her mind. The eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth to show himself strong in the behalf of them whose heart is perfect toward him. He said to the king, "Herein thou hast done foolishly, therefore from henceforth thou shalt have wars." But notice why they run to and fro, to show himself mighty in behalf of those whose hearts are perfect toward him. And Solomon said, "Keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life." Work on the heart. Keep it. And these seem to have been sent by the Lord. And they were to walk to and fro, and then they came back seemingly to make a report. The angel of the Lord that stood among the myrtle trees said, "We have walked to and fro through the earth. Behold, all the earth sitteth still and is at rest." Now God had sent the Jews back to Palestine. Now you may remember that in 48, when the Israelites declared themselves a sovereign state, Soviet Russia and the United States recognized them immediately. So did some other nations. But here the Lord had let them go back, and nobody seemed to care. I was thinking yesterday of, seemed like we dwell in a kind of a callous state. The Jeremiah wrote a section of book one time under the commandment of the Lord, and they took it to the king, and they began to read it, and he took it from them and took his pen knife. You know what a pen knife was? It was a little knife they kept their quill sharpened with that they wrote with, and that's what a pen knife was. He took his little knife and cut it up and put it in the fire. And the scripture says they didn't rend their garments. They weren't abhorred that he destroyed the work of the Lord. And I read the latter part of Romans 8 yesterday, and I didn't even shout. So I guess we just kind of get an in-between position. But there was carelessness here. The nations didn't seem to care. There will be times in your life when you will feel that nobody cares. The Lord will care, of course. The Jews were in such a position. The house of the Lord had been neglected. The city walls hadn't been built, and they probably felt alone. You remember the song, "No, Never Alone." He promised never to leave me, never to leave me alone. Then he goes on, "Then the angel of the Lord answered and said, O Lord of hosts, how long wilt thou not have mercy on Jerusalem and on the cities of Judah?" I might pause here for just a moment and say that there are different personalities in the deity that are called Lord and that are called God. And I'm going to read this from Hebrews 1. In the sixth verse, well, let's go back to the fifth verse. "Unto which of the angels," now this is speaking of God the Father, "said he at any time, Thou art my Son, this day have I begotten thee." And again, now this is God the Father speaking, "I will be to him a father, and he shall be to me a son." And he's talking to the angels in these texts. And again, "When he bringeth in the first begotten into the world, he saith, that all the angels of God worship him. And of the angels, he saith, who maketh his angels spirits and his ministers a flame of fire. But under the Son, he saith, Thy throne, O God." Now, isn't it true that here is one personality called God talking with another personality, and he calls him God? And when the Russellites translated their Bible, they said in the first chapter of John, in the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was a God, with a small capital, a God. And they don't believe Jesus is any more than Michael the archangel, a created being. Well, we know differently. Anyway, the Lord, the angel of the Lord, speaks to the Lord. Remember this from the book of Genesis. Therefore the Lord rained fire from the Lord. Both words are Jehovah. There's an interesting statement in Isaiah that has always puzzled me. I've never heard anybody say anything about it. In the Lord Jehovah there is everlasting strength. I know you remember it. Well, the Hebrew is in Jehovah Jehovah. There is everlasting strength. Now, I don't know why the repeat right at that place. Well, back to this. The angel's intercession is, how long wilt thou not have mercy on Jerusalem and on the cities of Judah, which thou hast had, against which thou hast had indignation, these 70 years? Now, you remember we went over this in Jeremiah 25 and Jeremiah 29 about the 70 years captivity. And the Lord answered the angel that talked with me with good words and comfortable words. Remember Isaiah's cry in the 40th chapter, comfort ye my people, saith the Lord. And it is interesting that I have noticed so few ministers have words of comfort. I had a family of relatives. They asked me to say a few words since I was a relative, though I wasn't a Baptist, and I did. And you know that fellow, an old couple, this was their baby girl, she had two children, up in her 20s, brutally murdered, so brutally murdered that they wouldn't even show the body, took the text as a funeral text, under those conditions, depart from me, ye cursed, into everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angels. What a sermon. There's not much comfort in lots of sermons. The angel that communed with me saith unto me, cry thou, saying, thus saith the Lord of hosts, I am jealous for Jerusalem and for Zion with a great jealousy. Jealousy can be a wrong sort of a thing, and it can be a right sort of thing. Paul said, I am jealous of you with a jealousy, a godly jealousy. The marginal says, with a jealousy of God. And when God has a feeling, he can do something about it. I may not be able to. I am very sore displeased with the heathen that are at ease. This was the report that was brought back to him. For I was but a little displeased, and they helped forward the affliction. The Lord had afflicted Israel, and the nations had carried it forward, and so they have continued. The history of the human race's treatment of the Jew is a disgrace to the human race. In the 30s, Life magazine published a lengthy article that there were over 800 businesses and associations in this country that were anti-Semitic. There is a league called the Anti-Defamation League, and people are always endeavoring to defame. And ever so often there will be a scandal gotten up on the Jewish nation, not so much as there were a few years ago. Therefore, thus saith the Lord, I am returned to Jerusalem. Now this was at that time. It will foreshadow it again. You see, the Lord said in Matthew, your house is left unto you desolate, empty, void. For I say unto you, you shall see me no more, till you shall say, blessed is he that cometh in the name of the Lord. They haven't said that yet. They're still quite self-sufficient. I like the untils in regards to Israel. Take this one. I will overturn, until he come, whose right it is. And I will give it him. Blindness in part has happened unto Israel until the fullness of the Gentiles be come in. Jerusalem shall be trodden down of the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles be fulfilled. These marked times. There will come a time, we trust it will be shortly, that the Lord will return to Jerusalem. The Jews are there, a goodly number of them, but there's a hollowness. There is an emptiness. There is no Christ. They haven't accepted him. Now you will hear stories that lots of Jews are getting saved. When you run it down, if 10 or 15 get saved, you hear it clear across the nation. And that's a drop in the bucket. And if they did all get saved at the present time, we're in the church age. We're not in the kingdom age. They're not all going to, very few of them are going to get saved in this age. There is a remnant according to the election of grace, but it's always very small. But at that time the Lord said, I am returned with mercies. My house shall be built in it, saith the Lord of hosts, and a line shall be stretched upon Jerusalem. That is a line of building. cry yet, saying, Thus saith the Lord of hosts, My cities through prosperity shall yet be spread abroad, and the Lord shall yet comfort Zion, and shall yet choose Jerusalem. Jerusalem has been trodden down, hasn't it? And today, the Jews are back there. But you know and I know, the Jews don't have the temple site. The temple site's the center of everything. It would be, well, it's kind of just like America. We don't have a temple. Couldn't have one in the will of God. They will have one eventually, and it will be defiled by the Antichrist, and then they will have the millennial temple of the book of Ezekiel, but that's going to be a massive thing. Then I lifted up mine eyes and saw, and behold, four horns. And I said unto the angel that talked with me, What be these? And he answered me, These are the horns which are scattered Judah, Israel, and Jerusalem. And you know that there were to be four great powers. Daniel saw them on two occasions, or Nebuchadnezzar saw them in the metals. Daniel saw them. It's in Daniel 2. Daniel saw them in the animals of Daniel 7. And they scattered Judah. The cruelty of the human race to the human race is always such a strange thing to me. Take the cruelty of, say, America to the colored people as slaves. If you know the ways they were treated, if you have read them, and they had no privileges, their word wasn't good in court, they were just chattel, they weren't considered as human. What was done to them, it's just like, well, this is my mule, I can do with him what I want to. And the history of the Jews has been a history of extreme cruelty. A group of Jews that came back to Jerusalem had lived in a city of Mohammedans, and they had to live in basement houses. It could never be that a Jew could look down on a Mohammedan. It's all right for this Mohammedan to have a two-story house. The Jew, he's got to live in that basement down there, because they can't afford to let a Jew look down on a Mohammedan. This actually took place. And then the Lord showed me four carpenters. Then said I, What come these to do? This word carpenters means a smith. It means an artisan. It has a number of meanings. He spake, saying, These are the horns which are scattered Judah, so that no man did lift up his head. They didn't care. But these are come to free them, to cast out the horns of the Gentiles, which lifted up their horn over the land of Judah to scatter it. You remember the four horsemen of Revelation 6. You remember the four sword judgments of Ezekiel 14:21. Thus saith the Lord God, How much more when I send my four sword judgments upon Jerusalem, the sword, the famine, the noisome beast, and the pestilence. And the number four comes in oftentimes in judgment. And here it will come in not to judge Israel, but to destroy the Gentiles back there and in the future. And God is still in charge. And I've always marveled. I can't imagine the devil being anything much more than like a feist dog, just around barking, insinuating, accusing. The Lord said, Hast thou considered my servant Job? There's none like him on all the earth. Yeah, but does he serve you for naught? You paid him real well. That's what he serves you for. You just stop that, it'll be all over. Here's self-confident Peter. Simon, Simon, Satan hath desired thee that he might sift thee as wheat. The devil didn't get anybody's body to give an overhauling until he had permission to. Paul speaks of turning two men over to Satan. In Corinthians, he said to turn such an one over to Satan for the destruction of the flesh, but he didn't get at him until he was permitted to. So God is still in charge, and we can trust him. And he did say, Lo, I am with you always, even unto the end of the world. And then again, he lifts up his eyes, and he sees a man with a measuring line in his hand. Then said I, Whither goest thou? And he saith unto me, To measure Jerusalem, to see what is the breadth thereof, and what is the length thereof. And behold, the angel that talked with me went forth, and another angel went out to meet him. And said unto him, Run and speak to this young man, saying, Jerusalem shall be inhabited as towns without walls, for the multitude of men and cattle therein. It's going to be a time to come when there will be no adversaries, no evil occurrence, to use the language of the Lord elsewhere. I'm going to go back to Zephaniah 3 and just read three or four verses here. Beginning at the 14th verse, we read, Sing, O daughter of Zion, shout, O Israel. I'm reading in Zephaniah 3:14, just a Haggai back and then Zephaniah, Haggai, and Zechariah. The Lord hath taken away thy judgments. He hath cast out thine enemy. The King of Israel, even the Lord, is in the midst of thee. Thou shalt not see evil any more. Notice the fifth verse of the same chapter says, the Lord is in the midst of thee. And in the 17th verse, we'll read about it again, preceding the 12th verse, he speaks of the midst of thee. But here, the Lord hath taken away thy judgments. He hath cast out thine enemy, the King of Israel. Even the Lord is in the, notice who is called the King of Israel. Even the Lord is in the midst of thee. Thou shalt not see evil any more. Now this is prophetic. In that day it shall be said to Jerusalem, fear thou not, and to Zion, let not thine hands be slack. The Lord thy God in the midst of thee is mighty. He will save. He will rejoice over thee with joy. He will rest in his love. He will joy over thee with singing. Notice this is Jehovah thy Elohim. Can you imagine the Lord singing? That's what it says, isn't it? He shall rejoice over thee with singing. I will gather them that are sorrowful for the solemn assembly who are of thee, to whom the reproach of it was a burden, and so on. But anyway, this is somewhat similar. They had some little measure of this, but not in the measure that will be hereafter. For I, saith the Lord, will be unto her a wall of fire round about, and will be the glory in the midst of her. How much of this is in the Old Testament and hints of it in the New? Ho, ho. This, curious about the word ho, it's an exclamation. And incidentally, there it comes from another word. You know how it's pronounced? Ho, if I remember correctly. Come forth and flee from the land of the north. Now, Babylon is actually northeast of Palestine, but across this way, it's desert. So they would come up the Euphrates River and then cut down to what John Breasted called the Fertile Crescent. They went down, maybe down the Jordan River, some of those streams where they could obtain water. And so the Lord is telling them to get out of that part of the world. I have spread you abroad as the four winds of heaven, saith the Lord. Deliver thyself, O Zion, that dwellest with the daughter of Babylon. I'm going to turn to Isaiah 48:20 and read that passage. And there comes a time when the Lord wants things to be done. In the 17th and 18th chapters of Revelation, where he speaks of that awful woman, among other things he says, come out of her, my people, that ye be not partaker of her plagues. This says, over 58, I'll go back to 48 and read it. Go ye forth of Babylon. Now this was literal Babylon. This was a prophecy. Flee from the Chaldeans with a voice of singing. Declare ye, tell this, utter it even to the end of the earth. Say, the Lord hath redeemed his servant Jacob. Then in Jeremiah 51:6. Now there are many such passages along this line, but we'll just read a few of them. At the time Zechariah spoke this, there were still many of the Jews still in Babylon, probably pretty well satisfied. Suppose your parents had come here 70 years ago, and you've set you up a store. Your parents are now dead, and the Lord sends somebody to you, give up your business and head on back for where you came from. You're not going to be too anxious to do it. I'm doing all right here. Well, there are a lot of them like this. The prophet Jeremiah said, flee out of the midst of Babylon and deliver every man his soul. Be not cut off in her iniquity, for this is the time of the Lord's vengeance. He will render unto her a recompense. And so it was a call to get out of that country. And the Lord has a time. Now he told them it would be 70 years, and it was. The Lord hasn't told us, and I'm glad he hasn't. Let's say, now I'm going to come to you in the era that will be called 1985. I'm glad you don't read that in the Bible. I'm glad that he said, the Son of Man cometh. And he said, be ready. There won't be a delay. I caught a plane some time ago, and because of the weather on the other end of the line, we were delayed an hour on this end of the line. It won't be that way when he comes. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, after the glory. Now I feel like it will be after the manifested glory. Hath he sent me unto the nations which spoiled you, for he that toucheth you toucheth the apple of his eye. After the manifested glory. Now this is one of the most striking statements in the Bible. I went to an eye doctor one time to get some glasses fitted, and I was supposed to look right straight into a bright light. And that was one of the hardest things I ever did in my life. We finally got through the process, but it was very hard, and you instinctively protect those eyes. Somebody throws something at you, you see it coming, you get something before your eyes. And to say, now the Lord is speaking to his earthly people, he that toucheth you toucheth the apple of his eye. Did you know that we underrate ourselves nearly all the time? Now just say what you want to, we do. The Lord said to Israel, I have loved you with an everlasting love. He said to Jerusalem, I have graven you on the palms of my hands. He says and goes just down the line in the latter part of Romans 8, nothing can separate us from the love of Christ. And we're sons of God. We're born again. We're justified. We're reconciled. We're forgiven. We're united with Christ. Remember Brother Copley's song, into that union which nothing can part, into what satisfies his and my heart, into the place of the song and the psalm, into the place of an infinite calm, finally into that to which there is nothing beyond. What a statement. And so, well, I will read to you from the 32nd chapter of Deuteronomy in the 10th verse, a verse there that is intensely interesting. 32:10. He found him in a desert land, and in the waste howling wilderness. He led him about, he instructed him, he kept him as the apple of his eye. You will take care of that eye, won't you? A very marvelous thing. The eye is, I suppose, it is the most sensitive part of our anatomy that is exposed. If I am near you and I reach down and touch your eye, you've got a lid between me and that eye before my finger can get there. He that toucheth the apple of your eye has to really make an effort. Hath he sent me? I feel that it was the Son that will be sent. Then sing and rejoice, O daughter of Zion, for lo, I am come, and I will dwell in the midst of thee, saith the Lord. In the 6th verse we have the word ho-ho. Remember in the 55th chapter of Isaiah, ho, everyone that thirsteth. Here it is lo, meaning behold, I come. I will dwell in the midst of thee, saith the Lord. The purpose of the building of the tabernacle was this. In Exodus 25, let them build me a tabernacle that I may dwell among them. And when they had that tabernacle built, here was the tabernacle. Over here was three tribes, over here was three tribes, over here was three tribes, and over here was three tribes. The Levites were camped right around, and the Lord was right in the midst of them. And so this is where he wants to be. This is such a sweet statement in the 21st chapter of Revelation. The tabernacle of God is with men. That word tabernacle means a cloth hut. Did you ever see a tent? Did you ever see somebody living in a tent? You don't see that anymore. I've seen quite a few people living in tents. I met a man and his wife in Alaska. They had a two-story log house. And he told me, he was an elderly man trying to sell out then. He said, when we moved here, we lived in a tent all winter. Now, a tent is easy to heat, but you have to keep that heat right there because they're also easy to cool. The tabernacle of the Lord is with men. How often this word comes before us. When it says the Lord Jesus Christ dwelt among us, it means he tented or tabernacled among us. Showing that this leaps on to the head end of the age, many nations shall be joined to the Lord in that day. And I might say this, that in that day, this expression occurs in Zechariah 21 times. We'll find it very much toward the end of the book. These nations shall be my people, and I will dwell in the midst of thee, and thou shalt know that the Lord of hosts hath sent me unto you. And the Lord shall inherit Judah his portion in the Holy Land, and shall choose Jerusalem again. Be silent, O flesh, before the Lord, for he is raised up out of his holy habitation. Raised up, going to show his hand again. Now notice an interesting statement here. Judah his portion in the Holy Land. This is the only place that it is called the Holy Land. There is a statement in Ezekiel, I believe that's Ezekiel 20:6. I'll take a look at it. That is interesting. In that day that I lifted up mine hand unto them to bring them forth out of the land of Egypt unto a land that I had espied for them, flowing with milk and honey, which is the glory of all lands. And in the last part of the 15th verse, which is the glory of all lands. Now that's what God says about Palestine. You see, I didn't originate that. God did. And then you'll remember in Daniel 11:45, I believe it was, we had another title given to it there. He shall place plant the tabernacle of his palace between the seas and the glorious holy mountain. The glorious holy mountain, the glory of all lands, and God calls it the Holy Land. And I've heard people say such catty things, and there are several ways you can look at the land. Take this for example. Their body shall lie 3 days in the city which is spiritually called Sodom and Egypt, where also their Lord was crucified. Now that's two sides of Jerusalem. But then this is God's title for it here, the Holy Land. And you think about it, it is that which came from Palestine has influenced more people than any other land. Interesting that the Bible. Lloydita, did you ever try to translate anything from Spanish into English or vice versa? It's quite a job. Can you imagine the work that has gone into just translating this book into practically every language on earth? It is influenced. Paul said the Gentiles were indebted to the Jews in Romans. So this is something to look forward to and to think about. When Jesus comes, every man is going to be affected. All of the earth will be affected. And I have made the statement that some of the promises of the Lord are so big, and I don't say this cattily or unbelievingly, they amuse me. Take this. I quoted it to you, and you can quote it yourself. Ask of me, and I'll give you the heathen for your inheritance and the uttermost parts of the earth for your possession. It's simple as that. Just ask me. That's what he says to his son, and I suppose the son will ask him. When he comes, every man will be influenced. Every land will be influenced. The earth will be given to him, but the center of it all will be the Holy Land. Thank God that this precious book has gone. I mentioned in my sermon Sunday, I preached in India. I received a letter from a group of people asking me to come and preach to them, and it was, I wish I had kept it. Over 300 million people in India can't read nor write. Aren't you glad you can read? Thank God that we can read. But what I started to say is some of them made a thumbprint. Some of them made another kind of sign. But anyway, they wanted me to come there and preach. Well, I did. But how thankful I am that there were those that gave their lives to give us the Bible. I've been influenced by it. I've read it. And I want to keep reading it. And if I don't read it, I will be guilty. There is such thing as ignorance being guilt. If I'm ignorant of the Bible, I'm guilty because I have it and I can read it. Well, I didn't want to give you a spirit of condemnation right at the last, but this is